welcome back to the Mike Huckabee Show on this Monday. And big news out of the Middle East over the weekend, and that is that Israeli Defense Minister Ehud Barak, former prime minister, announced today that he's not going to be running in the January elections. Also announced he's stepping down as defense minister. This came as a big surprise right in the middle of what has been a very tense time there on the Gaza border. Michael Rubin joins me. He is the editor of Middle East Quarterly. He's a former staff advisor at the Pentagon during the Bush administration and a resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute. Michael, welcome. Did this news about Barak surprise you?
Well, I think it caught everyone by surprise, but it may be hyped a little bit too much. No one in Israel ever, no politician in Israel ever truly retires. Ehud Barak certainly is a man of ambition. Going into these forthcoming elections, he saw the writing on the wall, perhaps, with some of the polling, which showed that his centrist party might only get 4 seats or so in the Knesset. But I suspect that should he see that the time is ripe in the future, that he will reemerge from retirement.
You know, he didn't have the greatest, I'm trying to be genteel here. He did not have the greatest tenure as prime minister, but he has seemed to have found a more effective role in the role of defense minister. Right in the middle of this tension with Gaza, and I guess it's kind of maybe tamped down a little bit as a result of the hopeful peace accord, but do you think that his timing was because the ceasefire had been announced and he thought this was a good time to get out before it heated back up again? Is that what's happening?
Well, I think he decided to get out when his reputation is at its strongest. I mean, just in background, you remember, of course, that Ehud Barak was a military hero. He was one of the anti-terror hunting squad, if you will, that infiltrated into Beirut dressed as a woman in order to take out senior terrorists successfully. However, when he became prime minister, he had a mixed tenure. He ordered the unilateral withdrawal from southern Lebanon. And rather than have the Lebanese government take control over that territory, Hezbollah did. And as a result, we had the 2006 rocket barrage into Israel, a rocket barrage which served as the model for what happened with Hamas most recently. Now, Israel did remarkably during the most recent fighting with regard to Hamas, and by no means is this fighting over. I think we're just at a pause right now. But Ehud Barak can look at the political polling. He can see that the public likes him because they perceive his tenure, as you say, as defense minister as a success. And perhaps he'll take a break now while he waits for the stars to realign for his own political ambition. Remember, this is a man that every time he came to Washington as defense minister, he would often have secret, for lack of a better word, powwows at the White House, in which he would talk about his own political ambitions with President Obama.
He seemed to be someone that the Obama White House enjoyed chatting with, more so than with Prime Minister Netanyahu, with whom they have not had the warmest of relations. And I'm being very charitable, of course, to even say that. Yet, in the last few days, the ceasefire that has happened, it seems to be calming things down. But, I mean, Michael, I look at this and ask myself, how reliable can we even think Hamas is going to be in being nonviolent all of a sudden when they are a terrorist enterprise, even as defined by our own government?
Well, indeed. And here I think you really hit the nail on the head. Hamas is dedicated to the eradication of Israel. That still remains in its charter. One of the reasons why Israel, and for that matter the United States and the European Union, pretty much everyone except for Hamas's Arab patrons and the government of Turkey, has had a problem with Hamas, is because they're the very antithesis of diplomacy. When they won the elections in January 2006, their first statement was to void all the previous agreements which Israel had made with the Palestinian Authority, agreements which served as the basis for the Palestinians to take control of territories, including the Gaza Strip. And so you really can't trust diplomacy with someone that won't honor the sanctity of diplomatic agreements, even if those diplomatic agreements were made, were signed on with the government that was in power previous to you. But we also see, perhaps in the latest violence with regard to Hamas, some of the aftermath of kicking the can down the road. In 2005, the Israelis, under at the time Prime Minister Ariel Sharon, unilaterally disengaged from Gaza. When people talk about Gaza as an occupied territory, they're absolutely wrong on every technical ground because there's not a single Israeli troop in the Gaza Strip. Now, when the Israelis withdrew, the Palestinians complained, well, we're still a little bit occupied because of this Philadelphia corridor, this 100-yard-wide strip of territory that went alongside the Egyptian-Gaza border. Condoleezza Rice, in one of her first actions as Secretary of State, got involved and negotiated for the Israelis to leave that Philadelphia corridor, which they had occupied under the Camp David Accords that were signed between back in 1979 for Egypt-Israel peace. Now, what's happened with the Israelis and no observers there, you have these tunnels, which Hamas has used for smuggling, and they're not like tunnels out of a World War II movie. These are things you can drive a Jeep through. Now, we already know from satellite photos and so forth, according to the press, that the Iranians are actively rearming Hamas as we speak. And despite this conflict, some of the missiles may have been knocked out, but these tunnels weren't.
You know, I don't know why anybody would trust that Hamas is going to suddenly start behaving. They're not. And we should know this. Even in Israel, I think it was like 62% of the people were disappointed that the ceasefire went into effect, feeling like that the Israelis need to go in there and clean out the rat's nest before they disengage. Will it leave them vulnerable if they don't finish this off? Or can we hope that the Egyptians will really do something noble this time and really shut Hamas down in the Gaza Strip?
Well, this isn't the last we've heard from Hamas or for hot conflicts along Israel's borders. Remember, we had one in 2006 between Israel and Hezbollah. We had one in 2009 between Israel and Hamas. We have one in 2012. It seems that every 3 years, the terrorist groups feel rearmed and confident enough to try to take on Israel. It's their own mistake. Now, what the Obama administration is doing is calculating that Morsi can deliver. I think they're wrong. But at her press conference, Secretary of State Clinton, held in Cairo, said, and I quote, "Egypt's new government is assuming the responsibility and leadership that has long made the country a cornerstone of regional stability and peace." Now, this happened just a couple hours before Mohamed Morsi, the Egyptian president, seized dictatorial powers. I don't think that's a coincidence. I think what Mohamed Morsi is interpreting is that there's a devil's bargain going on with Washington, that we will forget the notion of Egyptian democracy if you guarantee stability. The problem is Mohamed Morsi is an ideologue, and his notion of stability may not be what ours is.
You know, Michael, it seems truly amazing that we, as a nation, pretty much dismissed Hosni Mubarak and his government. The president called for him to step aside and leave, and eventually he was run out of office in order that we would install the Muslim Brotherhood. We wouldn't, but the Muslim Brotherhood would be installed in Egypt. And now that's falling apart, and you've got Morsi taking almost as iron a fist of control as Mubarak had. It's like the classic rock song, meet the new boss, same as the old boss.
Well, I think you're absolutely right there. The question for American policymakers is whether Egypt should be considered too big to fail. And several months ago, I was traveling through the Persian Gulf to some of our Arab allies in the region, Kuwait, Bahrain, and so forth. And what I often heard was, it's not a surprise that the Muslim Brotherhood won the Egyptian elections. After all, they'd been in opposition for more than 40 years, promising to do everything which Hosni Mubarak didn't, promising to have a chicken in every pot and a roast on every table and so forth. And so people voted for them, giving them the benefit of the doubt. The problem is, you really can't feed a country of 85 million people on Islamist rhetoric, religious rhetoric alone. And so the Egyptian people already are understanding that perhaps they've been had a bit by Mohamed Morsi and the Muslim Brotherhood. This is one of the reasons why Mohamed Morsi doesn't really want to go to new elections, doesn't want to be held accountable. We shouldn't be in a position where we will allow him to basically become a permanent institution. What I heard in these states in the Persian Gulf is not a surprise he won. The real tragedy would be if the Americans didn't let him lose.
Well, it's going to be a fascinating place of the world to watch. I hope the ceasefire holds. I've been right on that border on more than one occasion, Michael, and I just don't have a lot of optimism that over the long term, I think for the short term, over the next few months, we're probably not going to see much. But I don't think Hamas is suddenly going to walk the sawdust trail and have a road to Damascus experience, as we sometimes would say, and suddenly see the light and embrace Israel as a friend and an ally. And that does give me great pause. It's a pleasure to talk to you, and look forward to doing it again soon.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Michael Rubin from the Middle East Quarterly and also the American Enterprise Institute.